Well, hello, this is Bob Sutherland from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from a number of sources, the Raleigh News and Observer. We'll have some from the Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg, and Reuters. So we'll start today at close of business yesterday, Wednesday, May 1. The Dow Jones closed down 162.77, finishing the day at 26,430. The S&P 500 was down 22.10, closing at 29,2373. The NASDAQ was down 45.75, closing at 8,049.64. Gold is down $1.40, closing at $1,281.40. And crude was down 31 cents, closing at $63.60. Well, Red Hat reveals revamped logo. Shadow Man is dead. Long live Shadow Man. After more than 20 years as Raleigh-based Red Hat's main logo, the Shadow Man will no longer be the tech company's image bearer. On Wednesday, the company unveiled a sleeker and, in its words, more modern symbol, one absent the 1990s-era fedora-wearing man. Only the fedora remains. The change comes after nearly 2 years of internal planning and deliberating on how Red Hat's symbol, designed before the need for logos that work on smartphones, could evolve to attract new customers in the future. The final blow for Shadow Man's reign, which started back in 96, was a survey that asked people's opinions of the old logo, so said Tim Yeaton, head of corporate marketing for Red Hat. Mr. Yeaton says, "We came to the conclusion of thinking about some evolutionary changes to the logo, and while we were at it, we surveyed people that know us and what their impression is. What came back was shocking. It was words like sinister and sneaky, and that was the opposite of how we think of ourselves. On one hand, the company shouldn't have been surprised," Yeaton admitted. "The word shadowy is almost in the name of the logo's nickname, but the logo dates back to when Red Hat was a rebellious software startup and not one of the biggest players in cloud computing services. Employees fell in love with the mark, but they saw it for how we saw it and not how others perceived it," Yeaton said, noting many employees have the logo tattooed on their bodies. "It's fair to say we were shocked, but not surprised, by the survey results." Red Hat CEO Jim Whitehurst concurred with that sentiment. Well, the White House asked for $4.5 billion in new border funding. The Trump administration on Wednesday asked Congress for an additional $4.5 billion in emergency funds for the U.S.-Mexico border as the United States contends with a surge of Central American migrant families. The bulk of the funding would be spent on shelter and care. The number of families and children arriving alone is outpacing the number of single adults, and their needs are much different. The United States is on track to have as many as 1 million crossing this year, the highest since the early 2000s. It's not clear whether Congress will approve such a funding request. Well, the United States Small Business Administration said Tuesday that it is making federal loans available to businesses damaged by the April 10 gas explosion that killed two people in Durham. The SBA made the disaster declaration, which allows business owners to take out low-interest government loans to pay for bills, repairs, and other expenses, after Roy Cooper requested assistance in the wake of the deadly gas explosion, which ripped apart the 100 block of North Duke Street near downtown Durham. Kong Lee, 61 years of age, the owner of Caffeinate Coffee Shop, was killed in the explosion that destroyed the Jobs building. A second person, public service gas company in North Carolina, utility worker Jay Rambeau, died last week from injuries from the blast. In total, 18 buildings with a total tax value of $108.6 million were damaged, including two that are now condemned. A total of 23 businesses were affected, according to Downtown Durham Incorporated. Well, a couple of hundred affordable but aging apartments will be demolished in Chapel Hill this summer to make way for over 420 luxury apartments and new roads near Eastgate Shopping Center in the town's Blue Hill District. The Park at Chapel Hill Apartments project and the Elliott Road extension that will bisect the property from Fordham Boulevard to a new Ephesus Church Road roundabout will be built simultaneously. The developer is donating $3 million in land for the new road. A consultant has estimated about 7,800 cars could use the road each day. The town's Community Design Commission gave Blue Rock Real Estate the first of two required approvals on April 23rd. Town Manager Maurice Jones will make the final decision to grant the project a form-based code permit. The town council does not review or vote on projects in the Blue Hill District, where the form-based code regulates how buildings and other amenities should be built. The district rules only apply to land between East Franklin and Fordham Boulevard and South Elliott Road and Legion and Ephesus Church Roads. Well, back on the national scene, Boeing CEO refuses to admit the 737 design flaws. This is from the Seattle Times. Chicago, in a dramatic, intense news conference, his first since two deadly crashes of 737 MAX airplanes, Boeing chairman and CEO Dennis Muilenburg faced sharp questioning but refused to admit flaws in the design of the airplane systems. He says, "We have gone back and confirmed again, as we do the safety analysis, the engineering analysis, that we followed exactly the steps in our design and certification processes that consistently produce airplanes, safe airplanes," he said. In the case of the MAX, those processes certified as safe, a new flight control system that was triggered on the Lion Air and Ethiopian crash flights by a single faulty sensor and then engaged repeatedly to push the nose of each airplane down. Boeing is currently flight testing a software redesign of this system, the Manufacturing Characteristics Augmentation System. Yet Muilenburg would not concede there was anything wrong with the original MCAS design, saying only that this system is being improved with the software redesign. He said airplane accidents are typically due to a chain of events and that it is not correct to attribute that to any single item. At the brief news conference following Boeing's annual shareholder meeting at Chicago's Field Museum, Muilenburg faced one question after another about flaws in the MCAS system, but repeatedly declined to admit it was badly designed. His statements hewed closely to the line he followed on an earnings teleconference Wednesday when he said the MAX crashes were not due to any technical slip by Boeing during the jet's design or certification. He took questions for less than 15 minutes. Finally, after parrying a question about whether he thought about redesigning and final question about blame for MCAS, Muilenburg walked out grim-faced. Well, just a short piece from the sports page this morning. Texas Tech coach Chris Beard signed a new contract with an average salary of $4.57 million through the year 2024 and 2025, after leading the Red Raiders to their first national title game. Again, that's 4.575 million for a football coach. When a recession threatens, this is from the New York Times, when a recession threatens, the Federal Reserve has a trusty method for either preventing it or minimizing its damage. That is, cut interest rates by a lot, if necessary. But what happens when interest rates stay near record lows, even in good times? Well, with the expansion, economic expansion, on track to become the longest on record, one of the most important beneath-the-radar policy conversations in Washington will take place in the coming months. Fed officials are undertaking the most extensive rethinking of how they set monetary policy since they set a formal target for inflation 7 years ago. The results will help determine how long it can keep the good times going and how effectively it will be able to fight the next downturn. In the near term, any changes are likely to tilt policy in the direction of having lower interest rates for longer periods, with the aim of getting inflation to more consistently average 2%. It has been consistently below that level for years. The review comes as President Donald Trump has pressured the Fed toward lower rates. Well, in 2007, the United States government made a promise to public service workers, that is, to make 10 years of payments on their federal student loans, and any remaining debt would just be erased. But officials have largely failed to deliver, and that's left lawmakers questioning whether to end the program or to try to fix it. The Trump administration and some Republican legislators see it as a lost cause, arguing that the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program is misguided and has proved too complicated for borrowers to navigate. But a group of Democrats is pushing to salvage the program, blaming its failure on poor management by the Education Department. The group, which includes six 2020 presidential candidates, proposed a new bill this month that would simplify the rules and expand the offer to a wider swath of borrowers. Millions of teachers, social workers, members of military, nurses, public defenders, and countless others have been denied the support they have earned, so said Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, Democrat from New York, one of the bill's sponsors and a Democratic presidential candidate. She says it's time for Congress to fix this program and create a fairer and simpler process for public servants seeking loan forgiveness. Signed into law under the George W. Bush administration, the program is meant to help college graduates who pursue jobs that often pay modest salaries but serve a greater good, such as careers in teaching, the military, or the nonprofit groups. But turmoil has been mounting around the program since last year when the Education Department revealed that 99% of borrowers who applied for loan discharges had been rejected. As of December, just 338 public workers had been granted loan forgiveness out of nearly 54,000 applicants, according to recently released department data. Well, North Carolina Attorney General Josh Stein on Friday filed for formal appeals to the North Carolina Supreme Court, seeking to overturn a state regulator's decision allowing Duke Energy to bill customers in Charlotte and elsewhere for its coal ash cleanup costs. Last year, the North Carolina Utilities Commission authorized the Charlotte-based company to charge state customers to recover hundreds of millions of dollars that Duke has spent on closing ash storage sites around the state. In his appeal, Stein, a Democrat, argued that Duke continued to store the ash in unlined pits across the state, even after learning the practice would pollute groundwater, Some of those sites are in the Charlotte area, such as the Allen Steam Station on Lake Wylie and the Marshall Steam Station on Lake Norman. Those actions by Duke have caused massive pollution that is still being cleaned up, Friday's filing said. These appeals ask whether consumers should be compelled to pay to clean up Duke's mismanagement of its coal ash. In a statement, Duke spokesman Jeff Brooks said the commission's decision was a result of a transparent and thorough process that included input from the public and other interested groups. He says, "We believe the commission's decision was fair and gives customers the full benefits of cleaner and more reliable power while keeping rates as low as possible." In its decisions, the commission ruled that a Duke subsidiary, whose territory roughly covers the eastern side of the state, could recoup about $232 million in costs from customers. In a separate action, the commission permitted a different subsidiary to recover about $546 million in costs from customers in the Charlotte region and other parts of the state. Patrick Bufkin, staff attorney for the commission, said the regulator usually doesn't comment on pending appeals. Well, Wells Fargo plans to close a Raleigh branch in July. Filings with the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency disclosed the move on Monday, which impacts the Springmore branch on Sawmill Road. Bank spokesman Josh Dunn says consolidation is not an easy decision or one that we take lightly. He goes on to say we continually evaluate our branch network and make adjustments based on customer use, market factors, economic trends, and competitor actions. He said this in an email. This process leads to both expansions and consolidations. While branches continue to be important in serving our customers' needs, we're finding that customers are often using our wide range of digital capabilities for many of their banking needs. As a result, more transactions are happening outside the branch. When the office closes, customers can visit the Stonehenge Creedmoor branch and ATMs located less than a mile away. The Raleigh branch is one of 15 announced by Wells through filings Monday and the only one in North Carolina. Wells Fargo continues to be the largest bank in Raleigh in terms of deposit market share, according to the FDIC. As of June, the bank had 44 offices in the Raleigh metro. It had 26% of the deposit market share, according to the FDIC. Well, Sass Goodnight, Jim Goodnight, is grooming Oliver Schaubenberger, Chief Operating Officer of the Cary Analytics Company, to be his replacement someday. That's according to what Goodnight reportedly told Bloomberg last week. Schaubenberger is already responsible for setting the technology direction for Sass and executing the company's strategic objectives and business priorities, according to the company, which has declined repeated requests to make him available for interviews. In 2017, he was handed a promotion that cut Goodnight's own direct reports in half. Then, CTO was given the additional title of COO, Chief Operating Officer, reporting directly to Goodnight, a move that cut Goodnight's direct reports from 11 to 20. The move made him Goodnight's number two at the company, though the firm has repeatedly declined to say whether the position has put him next in line for the CEO role. And when he was promoted, a company spokeswoman was careful to point out that the news is not indicative of retirement plans for Jim Goodnight and should not be interpreted as such. Schaubenberger took on the CTO role in 16, has joined SAS in 02. He's a fellow of the American Statistical Association and previously led the Analytics Server R&D division at SAS, overseeing the development of a scalable analytics server designed for visual analytics and visual statistics solutions. Prior to joining SAS, he was served as assistant professor of statistics at the Crop and Soil Sciences Department at Michigan State University. Traditionally, SAS has released an annual report outlining its sales successes. Following the report, a top exec is typically made available for interviews. In 2019, that did not happen. A spokeswoman said the report could be available in early May. In the meantime, the company's original 8 named executives are dwindling. Following the planned June retirement of Chief Legal Officer John Boswell, Goodnight will be one of 3 still in the office, alongside his co-founder John Saul, who's still an EVP, and Keith Collins, currently CIO at the company. Goodnight has not publicly announced any retirement plans. Well, while we own Wells Fargo, we might mention this one. You can bank on it. The Wells Fargo Golf Championship is sticking around on Tuesday afternoon at the Quail Hollow Club in a bank-sponsored hospitality area near the first tee. Executives from Wells Fargo, the PGA, and the club disclosed a 5-year contract extension that will keep the tournament in Charlotte through 2024. Terms of the agreement were not disclosed, but Wells in recent years has spent $10 to $12 million as a title sponsor. That amount includes related and required commitments to buy advertising as part of a TV broadcast on Golf Channel and CBS. A new contract means higher sponsor fees for the bank. A source with knowledge of the agreement said the new contract is in the same range, with annual increases of 3 to 5%. The 2019 tournament starts today and ends Sunday. What I'm proud to say today is that we will be continuing professional golf in Charlotte for the next 5 years with the renewal of the Wells Championship, Kendall Alley, the bank's Charlotte market president, said. He called Quail Hollow one of the finest facilities in America for golf. You can see the level of investment, the level of commitment, and the kind of beauty that it is. Similar to the current 5-year contract expiring with the tournament this week, the new agreement includes provision to move the Wells Fargo Championship from Quail Hollow for 1 year to avoid a conflict with the course hosting another golf tournament. In 2017, the tournament relocated to Wilmington to make way for the PGA Championship, played at Quail in August of that year. A lobby at Wake Tech's Research Triangle Park campus has been designated as in homage to a continuing partnership between the college and Lenovo. Wake Technical Community College's RTP campus was first opened in fall of 18 and serves more than 1,100 students. Groundbreaking for a second building, which will focus on biotechnology training, is scheduled for later this year. The lobby of its first building will be designated the Lenovo Grand Lobby, following support from the Chinese computer giant that refers to RTP as the location of its dual headquarters. Lenovo has donated $157,000 to the school for equipment and technology at the RTP campus, as well as support for scholarships. The company also partners with Wake Tech to offer internships in information technology and business programs. Currently, 20 students are enrolled in Lenovo programs. According to its executives, the support for the college comes from a desire to continue bolstering the talent pipeline in the area. Lenovo is fortunate to have access to the local talent pool, and we look forward to further our collaboration with Wake Tech to develop skill sets for the future, said Kirk Scoggin, a Lenovo executive vice president. The internship program has proved to be successful. In only 2 years span, we've been able to convert over 25% of the interns into full-time employees, and we expect this number to increase as the program grows. Ford Motor Company has announced a new connected car initiative, and there's a big local connection in the RTP. It's called Connection in the Research Triangle Park-based SPIFY, S-P-I-F-F-Y, which offers on-demand automobile services such as car washes and oil changes, is integrating its application with Ford's connected car offering, Ford Pass. In an interview, SPIFY co-founder Scott Wingo calls it a game changer as the firm works to support all the big automakers. There are a lot of Fords out there, he says. It's one of the top models that we clean. And the integration announcement reduces a friction step for our customers. Getting the keys back and forth is kind of a pain point, he says. With Ford Pass, customers can grant SPIFY permission to access their cars through the application. SPIFY already offers this kind of integration with several automakers from Tesla to Volkswagen to Buick. But with its inclusion in Ford's big announcement comes a major promotion opportunity, Wingo says. Ford is going to be doing a bunch of promotion around this for customers who do have connected cars, he explains, and Ford's increased interest in the Triangle has helped to boost the partnership. Ford recently acquired Durham-based transit technology firm Translok, and due to the acquisition, its personnel have been taking a lot of trips to the Triangle, and while they're here, they've been stopping by SPIFY, Wingo says. He says his team is reaching out to all automaker partners, trying to get similar high-profile integrations and expand its customer base even further. Well, since we were talking about Tesla there, we'll say this in another article. They look to regain its luster in solar energy by slashing prices. Tesla, which lost its status as a nation's leading rooftop solar company last year, says it has figured out how to get back in the game, and that is by slashing prices. The company plans to announce Tuesday that it has started selling solar panels and related equipment up to 38% less than the national average price by standardizing systems and requiring customers to order them online. Tesla executives said these changes should put to rest concerns that the company, better known for its luxury electric cars, has neglected its residential solar business. But it is not clear whether the strategy will work or is even feasible. Tesla and its chief executive, Elon Musk, have struggled to deliver products on time that they announced with great fanfare, including a $35,000 version of its Model 3 electric sedan. The company has also struggled with quality problems. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it. Be sure to listen next time. I'm Bob Sutherland, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency. They've served our community so well since 1974 and can be reached by dialing 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired.